We interrupt regular programming to go live to Beirut, where the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Said Hassan Nasrallah, is speaking. Let's listen up.
It helps to keep the mouth and not allow the mouth to dry. And I advise some of those who make speeches, they might need, every two words, they might need to drink water. I'd advise them to drink lemonade instead. Now, regarding the latest issue, first of all, we have the anniversaries, the anniversary of the holy Muslim occasion and the Isra and Ma'raj. We also have occasions for extending our condolences to the martyrdom of Imam Musa ibn Qadi, may peace be upon him. And we also have a lot of other occasions to take advantage of in this very difficult phase. The Nakba of Palestine and the Nakba of the Ummah on the 15th of May 1948, meaning that 67 years have passed since the Nakba, and the 17th of May agreement with the Zionist enemy in 1983, which was toppled by the Lebanese people, its resistance and its martyrs. Now the topics, as usual, I've put together a list. Of course, the time available for the speech is 1 hour, not more, and I'm committed to this time frame. Inshallah, God willing, I will be able to include all issues, but if I'm not able, I will delay them to the very close date. I have a few words to say about the occasion of Nakba. The second main topic will be the Battle of Qalamun, which is the main topic, of course, and the third issue is the presidential elections in Lebanon. And some comments after what Michel Aoun said in his press conference, and I'll also say a few words about Bahrain and then about Yemen. Now, regarding Nakba, which is being commemorated by the Palestinians and many others in this Ummah, it is the 67th commemoration. It is a result of the defeat inflicted on the Ummah and the people of the region against the British Zionist project at that time. The 1948 territories were occupied and the Zionist entity was established and hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were displaced. And it was created in a very dangerous situation in the region. It was called Israel. It then expanded in 1967 and it waged its wars and committed massacres against the people of the region and the countries and the governments and the armies of the region in Palestine, Lebanon, Egypt, Jordan, and the people of Palestine and Lebanon. They were the biggest victims of the ongoing aggressions, and it is still continuing, and it expresses itself. These aggressions speak for themselves on many different occasions, like what happened in previous wars. Today, on the 67th commemoration of Nakba, we must learn the lessons, we must study and explain to the current generations. We must explain to them that period. We must look into it. We must ask, why did that happen in 1948? And then we must explain this to the current generations about that period, about the mistakes which were committed. And our current generations are still bearing the repercussions of these mistakes. We must talk about the responsibilities of that time and how much people assume their responsibilities, be it Arab governments, emirs, presidents, kings, or political factions, or intellectuals, or peoples. We will speak about the level of understanding and realization of that generation regarding the dangers and the threats. And we must talk about the wasted opportunities and the shortcomings and the miscalculations. And we must speak about the self-interest and the interest of certain parties and putting the parties of certain sides above the interests of the Ummah, losing priorities. We must speak about the betrayal and the deals which were made in order to preserve thrones or to established thrones and positions, and also, on the other hand, we must also recall all of the courageous and great beloved stances taken by leaders, intellectuals and figures and resistance people at that time, and the resistance movements which reflect the fact that they were strangers in the Ummah, and the Martis who fought until the very last bullet and until the very last drop of blood. This must also be recalled. So both sides of the story, the first is the bigger and the most dangerous, which led to the Nakba, and the catastrophic result, which was the loss of Palestine and the sanctities of the Ummah in Palestine and the displacement of its people and all the harm inflicted on us, the governments and the peoples of the region. We must do this. We're not going to do this now. This is a call. We must all do this. Everyone who considers that he has some responsibility towards the past of the Ummah and its present and its future. Today we are in need of such a revision, recalling, because we are witnessing a new Nakba, which is bigger and more dangerous. It is the Nakba of the Takfiri project. First of all, he who brought the Nakba to the region was the British Zionist project. Now it is the American Takfiri Zionist project. And America is using this in order to weaken the Ummah and tear it apart and to seize control of it and of its capabilities. Today, once again, we are witnessing the same problems we saw before: misunderstanding, threats, taking responsibilities, wasting opportunities, miscalculations, certain self-interests, interests of certain sides, setting interests of certain sides, putting them above the interests of the Ummah. Today, history is repeating itself, however, in different ways, under different forms. However, the hope and the will and the vigilance to confront these challenges and dangers, the new Nakba, brothers and sisters, is a lot more dangerous than the Nakba which is being commemorated. Its 67th commemoration. The Nakba of 1948 led to the loss of Palestine, but the people of Palestine remained, the sanctities in Palestine remained under occupation, of course. A Palestinian, something called the Palestinian cause, came about. However, the new Nakba, which is being created by the Takfiris in the Ummah, will lead to the loss of the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian, or the sanctities, and it, more dangerous, it will lead to the loss of countries and peoples as a whole. Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Bahrain, Egypt, Libya, Pakistan, Afghanistan. In all of the Arab and Islamic world, anywhere that Takfiris have a flag or a leader or fighters or an environment or an ideological penetration or a military presence or a media presence, anywhere they have such presence, this Nakba will be there in this country, will exist in this country, and it will also reach all of those who support it and all those who created it and all those who stand behind it, wherever they may be. And therefore, taking advantage and learning the lessons of the Nakba of 1948, in this regard, I call on all to learn lessons of modern history. We are suffering, our fathers and our grandfathers, and we also, and our sons and our grandchildren also will suffer from this. We must all take responsibility in confronting this American Takfiri project, which aims to bring about a bigger Nakba, which destroys the countries, the armies and the sanctities as well. It won't leave anything. What we always spoke about before, what we spoke about 6 months ago, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years ago. Today we are facing it in many countries: destruction, killing, slaughtering, Countries being torn apart. This is what awaits the Ummah. The Ummah was silent towards the Takfiri project, just as it was towards the Zionist project. The second main issue is Qalamun. Regarding Qalamun, I have a number of points, A, B, and C. The facts, very briefly, the results. In order to build a horizon, where are we headed to? First of all, regarding the facts, for days there have been ongoing battles in the Qalamun region. Between two sides. The first is the Syrian Arab Army together with the Syrian Popular Committees, Armed Popular Committees, Defense Committees, Popular Committees, Volunteers, and a high number of the inhabitants of the Qalamun villages who also gave martyrs in this battle. In addition, we had the members of the Islamic resistance in Lebanon. This is one team. The other team, or the other side, is the armed groups in that region. First and foremost, the Nusra Front and ISIL. Now, on the battlefield, the Qalamun area or region in Syria, on the eastern mountain range, a large segment of the eastern mountain range. It occupies a large segment of the eastern Lebanese mountain range. It is made up of large mountains. You saw this, the TV broadcast it, and some of these mountains, when we say mountains and hilltops, they are high mountains. Some of them reach an altitude of 2,580 meters above sea level, like Talat Musa, for example. The same goes for the other surrounding mountains. It is a mountainous area with mountains together. And the other mountains are around the same altitude. For hundreds of kilometers, we have mountains under very difficult circumstances. This terrain, these mountains, these valleys, this very, very large area, inside of this area, we have a lot of military positions, especially in the overlooking areas, be it those that overlook the villages of Qalamun in Syria, or the Lebanese villages in Abu Albak and Hirmil, or on the border crossings. There were a number of military training camps, a high number of caves, and other areas where militants gathered, also bases for weapons, and many factories which were used to put together booby-trapped cars. And on the TV, we saw many of these booby-trapped cars, in addition to operation rooms, leadership operation rooms. And what is most important is that this region also included the crossing points, the border points, or the logistical points to transport people, fighters from Arsal to Qalamun and Zabadani and the most of the areas in the Damascus countryside. Now, we continue with the facts. In this terrain, we had a lot of confrontations, a very fierce confrontations that took place throughout all of the stages of the battle. It led to the defeat of the militants and their withdrawal. The battles took place from hilltop to hilltop and from valley to valley. What is said on the media that they left and they fled, the militants, is not true. In all of the areas where there was a possibility for them to fight, they fought. But when they realized that they were defeated and heavy losses, material and human losses, were inflicted on them, then they would withdraw in the face of the military strikes. This is regarding the facts. Now, regarding the results up until now, of course, here I'm not speaking about a period which has ended. No, we are still in the midst of the battle. The results up until now, I want to speak about the direct results on the ground. Hence, I don't want to speak about the other results, which are bigger. For example, how does the fight for Qalamun and the victory in Qalamun, how this will reflect on the confrontation or the conflict in general in Syria or in the region, or how the Israeli enemy is following the developments of this battle and how this will reflect on the confrontation with the Israeli enemy. These are very big strategic issues. I don't want to address them because of the time constraint, but I want to speak about the direct. results. Regarding the direct results, a strong defeat was dealt to the armed militants, and they left. They left all of the areas of battle. All the areas which witnessed battle, and they were defeated, they withdrew from all of them. Around 300 square kilometers of Syrian and Lebanese territory was retrieved from the control of the militants. Most of the territory is Syrian. Complete destruction of the militants' presence in this area, be it camps, military bases, and also factories used to booby-trap cars or put together car bombs. And today you saw, when we saw the car which had a Lebanese license plate and 500 kilograms of explosives, of course the intention was to send it to Syria or to Lebanon, but the Lebanese license plate gives us the impression that it was going to be sent to Lebanon. It was detonated today, and the losses in the ranks of the militant groups, I don't want to speak about the number, but the outskirts have been joined together, be it on the Lebanese or Syrian side. The outskirts of Lebanon and Syria have been joined now. What does this mean? It means the outskirts of Ras el Warad and Al Jubbe and Ras el Ma'arra. Now we have fighting in Fleta. This was connected to the Britel outskirts, Baalbek, Nahla, Yunin. And therefore, these areas, Syrian Lebanese areas, have been connected to one another. And this location or this terrain has been completely cleared out of militant groups, separating Al-Zabadani, separating it completely off the rest of the areas that the militants controlled in Qalamun and Arsal. Also, cutting off the logistical points to Damascus. By the way, the biggest smuggling by the militants in Damascus countryside and Zabadani, it's from Lebanon to Arsal. Despite all of the measures taken by the Lebanese army, arms go in, ammunition, supplies enter into Arsal, and then they go and are sent to the refugee camps in Arsal, then to the outskirts of Arsal, then to the outskirts of Qalamun, and then to all these other areas that I mentioned, Damascus countryside, Zabadani. And as I said, many of these areas. The highest level of security was achieved. I don't want to exaggerate. I would say we achieved the highest level of security for the Syrian villages in Qalamun. All of these villages in that area, and the same goes for the Damascus Homs Road, also improving the security situation for many Lebanese villages on the border. I'm not speaking about 100% security, because as long as the militants are present in the Lebanese border areas, although they're only now in the Arsal outskirts, in Yunin, Nahle, Baalbek, Britel, reaching up to Tfail, they are now outside these areas. But as long as the armed militants are in the Arsal outskirts and in the remaining part of the Qalamun, Syrian Qalamun region, we cannot speak about complete security. Also regarding the results, achieving a much better geographic position by occupying the higher mountaintops and therefore having the ability to seize control after controlling Talat Musa, Jabal al-Maruh, Talat Abd al-Haq. Of course, this enables the Syrian Arab army and the resistance fighters, it enables them to have a control and to observe very large areas which will limit the movement of the militants. Also regarding the results, the number of martyrs, usually in the operations, we don't speak about the number of the martyrs. However, allow me to make an exception in the Battle of Qalamun, because from day one, from the beginning of the confrontation, some Lebanese and Arab media outlets which support the militant groups, not sympathetic to us, they spoke about 40 martyrs. We then issued a statement after 2 or 3 days. At that time, after 2 or 3 days, the number of martyrs was 3. Then they used to increase the 40. Some days they said 15, 30, 38. In the end, they spoke about 150 martyrs, if you want to count them, throughout the period of 10 days. But realistically, the number of Hezbollah's martyrs in the battle up until now is 13. 13 martyrs. And despite the fact, for us, one martyr is very dear and valuable, but we are uncovering the lies, deliberate lies. Of course, he who is doing this, he's inventing these numbers, 40, 60. Does he have information? No, he doesn't. And from the Syrian Arab army and the Armed Popular Committee supporting the Syrian army, from our Syrian brothers, the number of their martyrs reached 7. These are the numbers of martyrs. So up until now, we have a very big victory on the battlefield, an important and a great military achievement, and the military experts can explain. It's not my responsibility, because I don't consider myself to be an expert. One of the colleagues, they can explain the importance of this achievement militarily, technically, especially fighting in the mountains, the type of forces they need, the scale, the number of forces, especially if we speak about the area, 30 kilometers long, 10 kilometers wide. Before I speak about the second point, I must salute and once again recall the martyrs who sacrificed for Lebanon and Syria and the Ummah, they who are fighting, confronting this Nakba today. And I must also salute their families, their honorable families, whom I congratulate for the martyrdom of their sons in this fight for righteousness, which is clear. I also extend my condolences to them after losing their beloved. I salute all of the wounded who stood firm and fought and whose blood spilt over this cleansed territory, and the Lebanese and Syrian blood was mixed together in confronting the takfiris in defense of the Ummah as a whole, and I pray that they recover. I salute all of the leaders and the generals and the soldiers and the fighters and the mujahideen, those who brought about this victory and exerted heroic efforts and persisted in front of all of the hardships. We bow down in front of their heroics and their sacrifices and their loyalty. And as long as we have such people, this Ummah will not be subject to a new Nakba. I salute also our people and our supporters who monitored, especially the honorable families who paid a high price in this battle in order to bring about a new victory for Lebanon and for Syria and for Palestine and for the Ummah. Now, regarding the next point related to Qalamun, some of what was said in this battle, not only to shed light, but to further build upon in what we are headed to in the upcoming days. Number one, the Lebanese, before the beginning of the battle for Qalamun, they witnessed the scale of threats before the battle. I don't want to repeat what they said and the threats they made, the promises. They spoke so much. And we said at that time, this will not do anything to our determination. This must be further built upon. We must reach the following conclusion. When we have a goal and we strive to achieve this goal, threats or warnings or all of this will not have any impact whatsoever. It will only increase our conviction in the righteousness of what we're doing. So let no one waste himself in this regard. Also for the upcoming days, don't misunderstand. If you are convinced that this is right and this is the interest of our people and the country and the interest of the battle, we disagree regarding fighting this battle, nothing will deter us, nothing will defeat us. Number two, there were very silly attempts, if you allow me to use this term, as an attempt to try and pit the Lebanese resistance against the Lebanese army, saying that Hezbollah and the leaders of Hezbollah and the soldiers of Hezbollah are waging a campaign on the army and are accusing the army. But all of this is empty talk, which is baseless. Anyway, that's what they wish. Never did we want the army to get involved in this battle, and we are very keen on preserving every Lebanese soldier and every drop of blood for the Lebanese army soldiers, because it's a guarantee of security of the country. We always express our appreciation and respect for the leadership and the generals and the soldiers and the martyrs and the prisoners and the wounded of the army, and this will not change. So those who are trying to create this confrontation, let them step aside. Number three, which is the most important point, which will lead me to the last point regarding Kalamon, is the strong defense. If you notice, before the battle began, there was a political faction in Lebanon. I don't want to name it. Not all of March 14, because there are some members of March 14 who were silent. But one political faction and the media outlets affiliated with this political faction, and also Arab media outlets, those who I call the outlets of decisive storm, strong defense of the armed groups in the Kalamon outskirts and the Arsal outskirts. And they were waging, these groups were fighting on the battlefield, and the media battle and the political and psychological battle was being waged by that side, the political faction and its media outlets. Before the battle began, for example, they created an atmosphere. Let's forget the threats. They created an atmosphere by giving the impression that Hezbollah won't have the courage to go into this battle. If it does, a catastrophe and defeat and large losses, and the Kalamon area will be a graveyard for its soldiers. They spoke so much about the heroics of the armed groups and their capabilities. They spoke highly. And then, when the battle began, all this talk was in order for the battle not to begin. But when it began, from the very beginning, from day one, they said 40 martyrs for Hezbollah, exaggerating the number of martyrs. When the battle continued and when there were quick achievements from the beginning days, they began to speak very little, to try and belittle the achievements to the extent that they denied them. Regarding the images, not just the media office of Hezbollah was distributing, but there were media outlets which went up and saw all of the weapons. Say from the beginning, it's not important, relax yourselves and don't, and calm down. Anyway, this all reflected the stance of this political faction. But what is most important is how they were sympathetic with these armed groups in all different forms. And this requires us to stop and look. What do they call them, for example? Revolutionaries. The media outlets affiliated with these factions say battles are taking place between the Syrian army and Hezbollah on one side and the revolutionaries on the other. Who are those revolutionaries? I don't want to discuss the term. I want to discuss the background behind the term. I want to speak to the Lebanese, all the Lebanese people. I also want to address especially the leaders, their generals and the soldiers of the Lebanese army and the families of the martyrs of the Lebanese army soldiers, not to incite but to send a message to the wounded of the Lebanese army, the Lebanese security services and all the Lebanese families whose children have been kidnapped or killed or slaughtered in order to reach a description. Are they revolutionaries, the armed groups that attacked Arsal and occupied the Lebanese army positions and took the Lebanese army equipment and tanks and killed Lebanese army soldiers and generals and kidnapped soldiers from the Lebanese army and the internal security services? Are they revolutionaries or terrorist killers and murderers? We want an answer. Those, they who are shelling and attacking Lebanese army positions, are they revolutionaries or terrorists? Those who every day or many days, those who go down to Arsal and kidnap people from Arsal and then return their bodies, some of them with their heads cut off or some of them beheaded, are they revolutionaries or terrorists and killers? Those who attacked the families in the Baalba Kirmil area, I'm not going to speak about the names, Ja'far Amha's families, also from Britel, they kidnapped them and some of these people, their whereabouts are still unknown. Are they revolutionaries or terrorists and killers? Those who bombed the Lebanese army bases and the villages in Baalbak, Labwe and Ras Baalbak and Al-Qa and Nabi Osman and I'at and Baalbak and Nabi Sheet and Britel and Talya and Sir'in, the upper area of Sir'in and the valleys, are they revolutionaries, you, this political faction and its media outlets, or are they terrorists and killers? Those who sent car bombs to Hirmil and killed people and the Lebanese army checkpoints on the road leading to Hirmil and also in Nabi Uthman and southern Beirut and Bir Hassan and the cars which were discovered is not less than the car bombs which were set off. Are they revolutionaries or terrorists? The armed groups that occupy between 250 and 300 square kilometers of Arsal in Lebanon, you who speak about sovereignty, are they revolutionaries or terrorists? They occupy with the power of arms. No Lebanese army soldier or citizen is allowed to go there. No Lebanese farmer is allowed to go there. And if someone does go there, he is killed or kidnapped, or are they paid? They are paid ransom for his release. If this is not the reality, what is reality? What is the truth? Are they revolutionaries or terrorists and killers? I would like to ask this particular political faction about its source, its legal source. How is it? If Saudi Arabia is behind this, if it's the custodian of the two holy sites and the ulama in Saudi Arabia, they issued a list in public at least that ISIL and al-Nusra are terrorist groups. This is who you resort to. If that's who you resort to, if you resort to the international community that you speak about all the time, they are also on the international community's terrorist list. If you resort to the Lebanese court, those people are being arrested on being affiliated with these groups. So who do you resort to? What do you base your stance on? How do you say that they are revolutionaries, you wish them victory and you provide them with political support and psychological support and financial support and even more? We'll speak about this later. This is a real problem. Now, if we want to refer to what will happen in the future, let's speak about what will happen in the future. Blocking the road to sedition. Regarding the future, let me say something clear, something I want to underscore. Those militants, it's the right of the Lebanese. It's the right of the people of Bekaa, all the people of the Lebanese Bekaa region from all different religions and confessions, especially the people of Badbak and Hirmil, the honorable, all of them are honorable, God willing. It's their right to look forward to the day where in the outskirts of the area, be it in Baalbek or Britel or Nahle, Yunin or Alsal or the Qa'a area, it's their right to look forward to the day where there will be no longer any terrorists, not one terrorist, and not to live next to people from Al-Nusra or terrorists or ISIL or people who behead. That is their right, and this day will come. When will live this? But this day will come. Inside the Syrian territories, that's a Syrian decision. Inside Lebanese territories, if the Lebanese state and the government, if they take it easily, they take this issue easily for the militant groups to occupy Lebanese territories and for the terrorist groups to attack its army, people and its inhabitants, the Lebanese won't take this lightly, and the people of Bekaa won't take this lightly, the people of Baalbek and Hirmil won't take this lightly. The people of Baalbek and Hirmil who went to the south and fought the Israeli occupation and the celebration of our victory against the enemy, we will celebrate this occasion on 25th of May. They went to the south and they sacrificed a lot of martyrs, and they will not accept occupation of their territories on the gateway of their villages. And if the state will not take its responsibility, the people and those honorable people will take their responsibility, and no red lines will prevent them from achieving this goal. So I want to be clear. I call, the chance is still there. I call on the state to take responsibility, and also the friends of those revolutionaries to take responsibility. Their friends, your beloved, okay, have an impact on them. The Lebanese soldiers who every day the nerves of their families are played with. This is a crime being committed hour by hour. You're protecting them, defending them. Request from them, make this request from them. So let me here be precise. From the beginning, we said we are headed to a battle. No doubt it has begun, but we didn't speak about its time, how long it will continue, or its boundaries, geographical boundaries. And we said it will speak about itself, and it has spoken about itself, spoken for itself. What I say, we are in an open-ended battle in the time and location, and it's the right of us and our people, especially in the Baalbek and Hirmil, to look forward to the day whereby there will no longer be any terrorist groups in the outskirts, the border areas, nor on the entrance, the gateways to our villages and cities. This is a project which you, the Lebanese state, must work in order to achieve. Otherwise, the Lebanese people have always taken the initiative, and this people, the people who inflicted defeat against the Zionist invaders, this people is of course capable of defeating these terrorist takfiri groups, whatever be the support they get and whoever it may be who stands behind them. This is regarding Qalamun. I think that is enough in order to continue later on. Now regarding the next topic, very briefly, after the press conference which was held by General Michel Aoun yesterday regarding the issue of the presidency, I want to comment. General Aoun is trying to give exits, provide a way out of the presidential crisis in Lebanon. I call on the political factions to look into what he said. This is what I understood. There are delegations from the Free Patriotic Movement that will meet with parliamentary delegations to discuss this issue. I call for a serious discussion regarding how to find an exit, to look into them, and not to turn our backs. No, that's not acceptable. These issues must be taken very seriously, because the internal issues, the political issue, the power vacuum has reached a very sensitive, dangerous phase. So these alternatives should be discussed, or the exits, the ways out, some of them should be accepted. And he who has any other solutions, let him provide us with these solutions. We cannot put up with waiting anymore. We all say the key is to electing a president. It will solve the issue of the legislation in the parliament, although our stance is that the parliament does have the authority to do this. It will also solve the issue of the government, 24 ministers and the president, and it will also turn the wheels of the country forward when it comes to the security, economy and other issues. So we agree that we have this problem. If everyone sits in his home, there will be no elections. If everyone holds the other person responsibility, we're only scoring points against one another. But there is no result. Waiting for the foreign powers, no, that's useless. That will mean no president. Previously, the hopes were pinned on the dialogue between the Free Patriotic Movement and the Future Movement. But regarding the issue of the presidency, it seems they haven't reached anywhere. They also pinned their hopes on the dialogue between the Free Patriotic Movement and the Lebanese forces. I don't know if they've reached any results in the presidential issue. They pinned their hopes on the dialogue between Hezbollah and the Future Movement regarding the presidential issue. We said we have no problem in discussing this matter, but we said from day one that this is not discussed with us. It is to be discussed with General Aoun. They pin their hopes on a meeting or meetings between the main Maronite figures in Kirki, but they didn't reach any result. So all this has taken place. So we say dialogue who with who. This won't lead us anywhere. Let the four Maronite leaders meet. They can meet, but it doesn't seem that this will lead anywhere. So we've tried all this. Now we must look for a way out. In the whole world, even when they reach a crisis that doesn't have a constitutional solution, they search for solutions. There is an idea from the ideas proposed by General Aoun, but I would prefer, first of all, to discuss them, and then, because the parliamentary delegations will meet, I'll delay this matter. But in conclusion, I call for taking what General Aoun said, I call for taking it very seriously, far away from the silly analysis, like the silly analysis of the Kalamun battle before it began. No, take these matters very seriously. It's very important, very sensitive. Discuss the ways out, raise solutions. Let's search for a solution for the power vacuum. Nobody has an interest. We are accused, others are accused of wanting power vacuum, presidential vacuum. No, nobody has an interest in presidential vacuum in Lebanon. The higher national interest is for a president to be elected and the wheels of power to turn, to come out of all of these crises and these dead ends. However, this requires initiatives. It requires us to address the problems. Okay, I still have a few minutes. Regarding the Bahraini people who, for the fifth year, are continuing their protests and their peaceful movement with complete vigilance and determination, and are confronting oppression and the torture of prison. The situation in the prisons in Bahrain is very difficult. It's not just against the most basic human rights. Something very awful is taking place in the Bahraini prisons. In light of international silence, I call on our honorable Bahraini people. I say that the Bahraini government always relied on time. They wanted you to get frustrated, tired, to become hopeless, and then they arrest your leaders, your religious clerics, they throw them into prison, they oppress your movements, they close the doors of dialogue in order for you to back down, become frustrated and lose hope. Just like any popular revolution, what you are demanding cannot be gained by wishes or in a short time frame, especially as we have the countries and the world betraying you, not coming to your aid. The only alternative, the only option you have is to continue on the right path you chose. Your honorable struggle requires, deserves the sacrifices. and this patience, this perseverance which you have, which you are well known for. You must be completely confident that you are strong despite what this government is doing. These rulers, this government which goes to Camp David to call on the great Satan to support it against its people, just like others. So the horizon remains open and the movement will continue. Loyalty to the symbols, the leaders, the religious clerics, all those who are suffering in the prisons, the martyrs, the wounded, you are the people of loyalty. What you're doing every day, this ongoing movement, this in the end will lead to the result and will fulfill the hopes of the martyrs, the wounded and the detainees and the honorable families that have put up with the hardships up until now. Regarding Yemen, a last comment. Today is day number 52 since the beginning of the American Saudi aggression against Yemen. We must repeat our condemnation of this American Saudi aggression against Yemen and its people and its army and everything in Yemen in light of the ongoing international silence. And with all of these very difficult developments taking place, on day number 52, we must once again repeat what we said on day 40 and before it from day one. This aggression won't achieve its goals, and on day number 52 we say it has failed in achieving its goals. And in the last speech on day 40, I said it failed in achieving any of its goals, not one goal. I said, tell me one goal that has been achieved. Of course, they come out and they curse us. But please, look at the press conference or the statement of the Saudi coalition. Look at the goals and say to the people, this is one of the declared goals of Operation Decisive Storm that have been achieved. What has happened until now is failure after failure, even more than failure. What is happening, what has been achieved, what is happening now in Yemen is contrary to the goals. Meaning, if the goal is to force the Yemenis to bow down and kneel today, there is strong Yemeni insurgency and insistence on independence, sovereignty and dignity and rejection of hegemony. So if what is required is to dismantle the Yemeni army, the Yemeni army's cohesion is increasing, is the goal, if the goal is to weaken or break Ansarullah's strength and presence is increasing, if the goal is Iran's hegemony, you yourselves, you have made Iran the most beloved friend of the Yemeni people because of Iran's behavior and its stance, and you have made yourselves the ugliest enemies of the people of Yemen. Today, what is happening is directly the opposite of the declared goals. Not only did they fail in achieving their declared goals, what their aggression is achieving is directly the opposite of the goals they were looking for. Yes, the real situation, which we must not ignore, yes, there is something you have achieved. Destruction, killing, these are official statistics from international organizations, not statistics from the Yemeni factions that are fighting the aggression. A large number of children, women, civilians, martyrs, wounded, the immense destruction. There is something very strange, allow me, in these few minutes. For example, you understand, anything, an army or warplanes, they can do anything, but to attack graves, for example, mosques, okay, that's not new from them. Israel bombed mosques before, but allow me, unfortunately, I want to compare with Israel.
Well, you've been watching a speech out of Beirut by the Secretary General of Resistance Movement, Hezbollah, Said Hassan Nasrallah, covering a few main topics, starting off